Welcome in to the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick for March 25th. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Since the last time we talked, we had a hell of a show out at Doss Barbecue. And it'll be tomorrow, the day after we record this. But before people be able to hear it, my son Nick turns 38 years old, man. The first day of spring.
How about
I'm
it?
Like, I'm like, holy crap, how can that be when I'm only 42 myself? But man, we're going to have a good time. He loves it's fun. He's autistic. He's got everything is habit repetition. And ever since he was a little boy, he liked going to Red Lobster on his birthday. So man, that's what we've been doing.
And what's he rear back on when he's there?
He goes for the breaded clams that they have. It's funny because he'll get a double order of the clams with a big thing of fries, and he likes to get a to-go drink, and he'll eat his stuff real slow and save part of it and eat the rest of it in the car on the way back to go eat his cake. No, I don't know why he does that, but it's his birthday, and that's the damn way he wants to do it. So that's the way we do it, man.
That's supposed to do on your birthday.
Yeah. And so, but he's fired up, man. We're going to have a good time.
Does he do the salad and the biscuits and all that? Or
no, he don't do none of that, man. All he eats is the clams and the fries. And when at home, at least I'll get some fruit in him, you know. He's not going to indicate a vegetable. He's like, I think if he had a vegetable, if he touched one, he'd need a shot from an EpiPen or something, man. He's really funny, too, because I can get him to try different things every now and then. And there's been a couple of things that I've seen that he likes, you know, and I say, damn, Nick, you like that? And he'd go, yeah. I said, well, you want me to buy some? No. never mind then.
What about the cake and ice cream? Is he cake?
Oh, he's all on the cake and ice cream now. He's all about the sweets.
Vanilla cake or chocolate? What's he going with?
He switches up. He likes chocolate cake with white icing a lot of times. So that's
what kind of gifts y'all get him? What do y'all do? Cards or what do y'all do?
We ask him what he wants because, you know, it's not like he's very hard to get for, you know, but his main thing is going to the gym and doing stuff. So we get him new workout outfits or new tennis shoes. He's ready for a new gym bag and some stuff. We get that, you know, for stuff that he uses, you know, generally it's, you know, some kind of clothes stuff. Cause he's not like a video, he don't ever play video games his life is pretty much centered around going to the gym with me, you know, and I can talk him into a wrestling show now and then. But his first instinct is no. That's one of the few things that I can get him to try. And I'll say, well, you want to do it again? And he'll say, you know, but every time I get him to go to one of our shows, it's like, he didn't want to go. And as soon as he gets there, he has a blast. It works out good. So I got a couple things coming up that I'll get him to go to. I don't take him to the Doss Barbecue show because I'm so busy going around and there's so many people there. And I don't think he'd be comfortable. He wouldn't have a place where he could go and just zone out and chill, you know. Yeah. So, but I got a couple other gigs coming up that I'll announce here real soon. And the one in particular, he's really going to like. So nice. We got more stuff coming up on our next show at Doss Barbecue. We've already got five matches already signed for it. So everything's going good, man. We got some really cool things in the fire. I know I say that every time, but that's because we keep plugging.
It's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, and things are, you know, happening one by time. You know, things don't just happen overnight. There's things that are in the fire. Sometimes you got to work on them for a while before they come to fruition. But we're going at it, man.
Well, let's get into some questions from the fans. What do you think about that, brother?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Let's see what they got to say. We always appreciate it. Wherever you listen or watch this, we hope you leave us a question below, and we will read them all here with Mr. Nick Patrick. Nick, let's start with Adam Krasnoff. He says, I've heard several wrestlers on interviews claim that Vader had some of the smelliest wrestling attire. He's said to be one who barely washed his gear in between matches. What's your opinion on Vader's in-ring hygiene?
Sometimes his gear was really rank. Yeah. You know, I don't call people out and throw them under the bus, but since the cat's out of the bag. Yeah. Bless his heart. He didn't make too many trips to the laundromat. He thought that just soaking that stuff and letting it dry was enough. And man, no. there are certain materials, especially when you sweat in it, that yeah. needs soap and water, not just water and drying, you know.
And if you've seen Vader, big boy, he sweat a lot.
Oh yeah. Hell, I sweat. I'm not. Yeah. You're right. You know, and the leather gloves too, you know, unless you have two or three pairs of them to switch out and let them dry and clean them, they get smelling really funky. Like, cause I had knee braces that I wore all the time. And when you work 300 shows a year, you're working pretty much every night. There's no way, especially when you're in a different town every night, especially on the roads, flying different places and stuff. You don't have time for your stuff to completely dry out. You know, so you have to have a couple of pairs and you have to try to, you know, seal bag stuff that's going to be funky until you can get someplace where you can wash them, you know. But because I wasn't about going out there smelling like hell, man. I wanted my braces. Stuff to be right, you know. I don't want to say, damn, here comes Nick Patrick. Holy shit. No, I mean, because, man, those knee braces, man, they could get, you know, it's that rubber, you know, that stuff that if you don't wash them and sanitize them and dry and let them dry, and you just like wear them two or three days in a row, not only would they smell funky as hell, but they can break your legs out with, you know, like a rash, you know, which I always wondered, like, how can somebody have such funky gear and not just be broke out from head to toe with some kind of fungus of some sort?
Yeah,
man.
Something.
Oh, man. Something. Wash that sucker down with a hose or something. Man. Hell.
Speaking of, did y'all get chances to go to laundromats, or did you rely on or just right there in the room?
You got to try to squeeze that in at your hotel when you can. I have found that a lot of times the buildings that we go to that have sports teams that play there, that they'll have rooms where they have laundromats where their trainers wash uniforms and stuff. And if we happen to catch one of their trainers that's there, Teddy Long was great about doing that, man. He'd find a washer or a dryer at a building and buzz them, because they was using people from the teams who were there in the back working, doing stuff, you know, even if the team wasn't there, you know, especially equipment people. Yeah. You know, he'd buzz one of them, hey, man, can we use your washer and dryer? And, yeah, sure. Come on, man. And I'd me and Teddy be in there washing the hell out of our stuff. Otherwise, you gotta either have, you know, find a hotel that's got a little washroom. A lot of time we stayed at Marriott. Most of Marriott's had a little washer dryer room, you know, and the laundromats are a pain in the butt. You know,
you got limited time on the road. You don't want to spend it at the laundromat.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
What did you travel with? Like, did you just have one bag and just like how many uniforms you rotate?
I had one bag that was a carry on that I kept. One referee outfit, my tennis shoes, my stuff that I needed, you know, to go into knee braces, but I didn't really have a lot of toiletries. Well, I did have little to-go toiletries because, you know, you could only have so many ounces and all that stuff, you know, but I had one travel bag that I had my one work outfit in. I had clothes on me, so I figure I got clothes. If I have to wash, you know, I'll go get a pair of shorts or a pair of sweats or something somewhere if I have to wash these, because I've had my bag lost before. And you have to, you know, you go in your stuff until you can't take it no more and go get you a sweatsuit and wash your stuff, man. But try to find a place, you know, because laundry, man, and laundromats suck.
So you keep just work stuff in the carry-on, and then you have one bag that you check?
Yeah, and then I had a big bag that had all my clothes in it, you know, because I would it depended on how many days I was going. If I was just going for a week, I would try to carry enough stuff where I wouldn't have to find a place to do laundry, you know, and you have some big Ziploc bags and big garbage bags so you can keep your stuff, your clean dirty and your dirty stuff separate from each other, you know, and that's – that in itself is hard to do, having, you know, because even if you bag your dirty stuff up, you know, if you've been sweating and you got your clean stuff in there with it too, so it's hard, you know. A lot of things people don't think about, you know.
That's why I was processing.
And when you're going international, you can forget doing laundry because they don't do underwear and stuff anymore, you know. And that's generally what you need to wash, you know. Yeah. And it is so, you get something washed international from your hotel and you'll pay for it. And man, it is unbelievably expensive. It's crazy. Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And laundromats suck everywhere in every country.
I heard Foley used to travel sometimes with just trash bags. Did you ever see that or hear that?
Yeah, I heard about it, and I didn't travel a whole lot with him. So he didn't throw his trash bag in the back of my trunk. I only made one trip with him, and it was maybe two, but my one trip I made with Foley was very eventful. It was funny. They flew him and I, and we were doing Baltimore, but they flew him and I into Salisbury because we were doing it and Baltimore, and they flew everybody else into Baltimore. So him and I, we pick up a rental car and we get a room out there. It's cheaper to stay over here than to go into Baltimore. And then we'll stay here and then we'll go to Baltimore tomorrow. So we're going to the building and we're trying to find a building. And when we drove to it, we came in from the opposite way, came in from the north side of town. But the airport here where we went, they flew us into Salisbury, was like on the south side. So we're coming up and we're not sure how to get to the building. So we're coming up to this stop sign and a stoplight rather, and there's traffic there. You know, we're about three deep. And we come rolling up on this guy. Back at the time, man, I had long hair and earrings and a goatee and Foley had same thing, you know. So we rolled up and there was this older guy with his wife, and he had some older grandkids. You know, they weren't little babies, but they were kids, elementary, middle school age, you know. And we pulled up and I had my window down and I was going to say, "Excuse me, sir." I was going to ask him how to get to the building, right? And this old guy looked over at us and we're like, he goes, he just made a face and he didn't even look forward or nothing. He stomped on his freaking gas pedal and went wham and rammed right up into the ass end of the car parked in front of him at the red light. And me and Mick Foley looked at each other and went, "Holy crap!" The light turns green, and so we just took off going, "Hey, sorry, man. We weren't trying to create an accident. We just wanted to know how to get to the damn building." And then we stopped at a gas station. I got out and asked somebody. First guy at the gas station didn't speak English really well. He didn't understand what the hell. So I found somebody pumping gas. I said, "Hey, man, can you tell me how to get to the Civic Center?" "Oh, yeah, sure." Right out there. We were pretty close. We were only about three turns away from it. But,
Y'all didn't stop for the wrecked guy, though.
No. He was freaked out. But I think if we would have got out and tried to help him, he would have had a heart attack.
He would have shot you if he could.
Yeah, and more than likely, if he'd have had a piece, he sure would have. But he was scared to death of us, man. I don't know. I'm just going to say, this is all I was doing. Hey, but I looked like hell, I guess.
I look like hell. That's great. Let's see what we got next. Jack Spade said, "Nick, saw Warlord's name on the birthday list. Did you spend any time around him? He seems very intimidating. Thanks for answering my questions every show."
He's one of the guys I really didn't spend a whole lot of time around or really work around a whole lot. He was one of, you know, sometimes you're kind of like a ponies posing magnets. We talked about me and Kurt Henning being that way. But he was the same way, but we had a ton of mutual friends because I was friends with all the old school Minnesota guys, you know, Rude and both Road Warriors, and I knew Nikita. We didn't really travel a lot, but I knew all them guys. And but I didn't really know him a lot. I met him, but you know, we didn't work or travel anything together. But he was one. You know, he was a good guy. You know, all those Minnesota boys were pretty cool. Got along with all of them.
Let's see what we got next. Justin Davis said, "Nick, so in the ring, what was one entrance in WCW and one entrance in WWE? And when the music hit and the crowd went nuts, it gave you goosebumps and you just knew it was something big."
Well, back in with WCW in the early days, they were still, you know, they still played actual copyright music and, you know, until the copyright stuff came. So Road Warriors was coming out to Iron Man until they, you know, start paying for it. That always got a huge pop. Steiner's coming out to Welcome to the Jungle got a huge pop. But I'll tell you who brought the house down back in the day with their intro was JYD coming out to Another One Bites the Dust.
Yeah.
Man, when he come out to Another One Bites the Dust and they hit the lights down, boom, and they only hit him with a spotlight coming out, and he come out doing his stuff, They went insane, man, back in the day. That was, you know, those were three good ones right there. Modern day, nobody has an intro in old days or new days like Undertaker.
Yeah.
Man, especially overseas. Overseas, like I've told people before this, man, when you're standing in the ring in one of those huge arenas and it's completely sold out, you know, everybody's facing you, so the sound is coming from all directions. And sometimes when everybody pops at the same time and you're standing right there in the middle, you can actually feel the sound, kind of like being at a drag race, you know, and when the drag races come by, it's so loud that you feel that vibration, you know, like, holy crap. You can actually feel the sound in the ring when they really, when it's a roar. And when that Undertaker music, the roar would start, but it kept building. And then soon, you know, that's the dang, 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 you know, then all of a sudden, boom, the light would hit him and there he was. And as soon as it hit him and they could actually see him, the roof would come off the place, man. And you could feel the sound. So to me, that was, you know, there's a couple of guys that's like that. Austin is like that. Rock's like that. You know, all those big top tier guys, you know, they, you know, that the people are so familiar with their stuff. But as far as me actually feeling it, I felt all those guys' music and stuff. But to me, Undertaker's was, because it was so long.
Every time. You know? Oh, yeah. So long.
So you had that sustained, you know, and the other guys were explosive and they got the pop and they come and they walked around and then it was done. But he did that slow walk and all the way in and the hat and the whole production, you know. And he'd keep them the whole time, man.
I didn't realize it till later. I think it was one WrestleMania. It might have been New Orleans, and I was in the crowd and, you know, videoed it. It's mm-hmm. like whoever's coming out next, I'm just gonna start the video. And his intro was like 11 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say,
I don't even get a match that long.
Yeah, yeah.
His intro is that long.
Yeah, when you know you got to go 30 or 40 with Taker, there's going to be a good 10, 15 of it at the beginning, depending on the crowd and how long the walk is. You know, it's that's going to be part of your time. But
did
hey,
you ever were you ever in there for any Freebirds? I heard they used
to. Oh, yeah, all good. The Freebirds back in the day when that was when music was, they were like the first ones to bring music. So,
yeah, I heard they were.
Yeah, when that first started happening, it was pretty fire, man. It was crazy. It was at a time when Georgia Championship was really hot. They had been doing it, and they were the first ones that I really heard come in and do it at Georgia Championship Wrestling back in the really early 80s, you know. And it caught on fire. Now everybody's got, hell, there's referees that want ring music now. Jeez.
let's see. Edward B. Ring wants to know, Nick, how come we've never seen a scaffold match in the WWE, you think? Do the risk outweigh the rewards?
Yes, it does. There's only so much you can do up there, and guys are hurt enough. You know, my God, you can get hurt enough just doing regular and high-paced, intense, working, hungry work. You can get hurt and do get hurt on the regular, you know. Why drop two stories and, you know, and because there's no crash pad for them to land on. You know, they landed in the ring.
Yeah.
And there have been too many guys blow their knee. Jim Cornette blew both of his knees out dropping from the scaffold. You know, it's just a matter of time. And I think that especially after Owen Hart's thing, you know, yeah. I think to have somebody drop from something. Yeah, man. And guys, like I said, guys get hurt enough for us normal wrestling, you know. And when you get, you know, when your angles peak and guys have to bring the intensity and you start gimmick matches, I understand that. But there's no way to work a 20-foot fall if they don't have a gimmick like announcer's table that's got some stuff under it, you know, or something that's got crash pads under it that they can, you know, crash through. You know, unless they got that, man, that's just your body taking the whole deal. And you can even land right and get hurt, you know, from that. Go ahead,
did
man.
Did you ever work any?
Did you ever No, hell no. By that time, I was scheduling what refs work what. And if I was in, if they happened to have one on that, I scheduled somebody else. I don't like heights, man. And I ain't climbing my old ass up there. They're going to have to give me a super bonus and some super safety harnesses and shit in case I fall off that son of a bitch. And even if I climbed up there, they'd have to get the freaking fire department to get me down.
They'd have to throw you off.
That'd be another 10 minutes there just getting my scared ass, unclenching my death grip that I've got on the damn platform.
You'd have to take a bump to get off.
Hell no, they wouldn't peel me off that son of a bitch. Hell no. Hell no. I'd be like a scared cat. I'd be crawling under that sun. No way.
So you've worked plenty of cage matches, right?
Oh yeah, I've done cage matches forever. Yeah.
Scaffolding. You ever work any death matches?
Oh, death matches. I've worked every kind of gimmick match there is, except the scaffold match. You know, all the bull ropes and brass knucks and.
What do you think for the ones you were in the ring with? What do you think was like one of the most gruesome matches you ever had to be a part of?
Probably back in the day when Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer had their feud going, because both of those guys would bleed like stuck pigs, man. And when you worked with them, you was just
covered
with blood, man. And the smell of human blood is terrible, especially if you're blown up and you've been working all night and you're all of a sudden you're covered and in somebody else's freaking blood, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want that unless you're in a damn fight. You don't want it to, sure. But oh my God, it's just, And if you think about it nowadays, the health hazard involved in that, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I think about it too, you know, back in the day, a lot of the times, you know, especially the guys that were scared to do that, they had asked me to do it for them, you know? And now here I am, either if I didn't keep it in my hand, I had to keep it in my pocket. And every time I kept it in my pocket, reaching your hand in there to grab it, a lot of times you poke yourself.
Yeah.
So now it ain't clean from being in my pocket and poking me, you know, and now I get it in my hand and I'm waiting for the right time and I'm carrying it and I'm sweating on it, you know, so how unsanitary can you be? Hell, I had Brian Pillman stick one in my bicep one time, man. I was like, and he's trying to hand it to me. And it was, I've told you this story before, man. Yeah. I was like, I looked down, I'm like, oh shit. I brushed it off, stepped on it and carried on the match. Next thing I know, I got like a trail of blood going down my arm and dripping off my finger. And Brian had two drips. here, let me drip some of this on you.
who's somebody we know that you would have to cut him for?
I cut Regal. I cut a different young green guys.
Are they just nervous about it?
Yeah, they just didn't want to carry it, didn't want to do it, and you know, it was okay with somebody else doing it. You know, I was taught by my dad, and I learned about that from element. You know, I knew that since I was a little kid what was going on. You know, Pop smartened me up, but it still freaked me out. You know, I was like, holy crap. I was almost more scared of that than somebody actually busting you open. You know, because sure. I was scared to get a shot as a little kid.
I
don't want to. You know, but to imagine doing that, and I thought, oh my God. It just was, you know, and then when you do it, it's some guys are just like to do that shit. You know, I didn't. It was business. It stings. It feels like it burns. And you can actually hear it go a little bit. You know, it's a really weird feeling, you know. That was to me the most gruesome was Tommy and Buzz. And especially if Tommy had been drinking a little bit of beer that day and it had some alcohol in his blood. He, you know, and Buzz was nuts and would just hit it. You know, he was trying to look like Abby at the end of the day, you know. So. But I tried to stay away from both of them when that shit started happening. But, you know, there was no way. I was just
because then, like you said, after that, you're already struggling washing your clothes, and now you got a uniform with blood on it.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to soak that immediately or it stains.
I was about to ask what was the trick.
Ice water and seltzer, whatever you can get in. Yeah, you got to immediately soak it before it starts drying and get the blood out of it, and then try to wash it with the stain remover. And, you know, sometimes you don't completely get some stains out, you know, because especially it depends on how long it's been on there, you know. But that was probably the most gruesome, you know. I saw Brad Armstrong hit it one time, and I think he was working with Buzz. And we had to take him to the hospital because He used a surgical blade instead of the old blue blades like everybody used to use.
Oh, man.
They're so sharp and so smooth, you don't feel how bad you're doing it, you know? And he zipped himself bad, and they couldn't get it to stop. Yeah, and it was cold ice and compress, and it was still just, you know, after the matches were over, had him down to bleachers because they did promos. And Brad ain't doing no promos. We're taking his ass to the hospital now, you know? And they had to stitch him all up and shit, you know? So you kind of quit using those.
What's the for those that may not know, what's the difference in long ways and up and down? Is there a difference?
Long ways across heals up a lot quicker. Up and down leaves those ruts like Abdullah and those guys have. And you'll still get scarred up going either way you do it. There's no way to cut yourself in the head and the soft tissue and not leave scars, you know. But doing it sideways, you won't. And if you do it a lot, you know, there was guys back in the day, they was doing it every night, you know. There was guys that got used to doing it every night that they'd do it real hard the first night so that somebody could just hit it the next night and it just goes. They wouldn't have to do it. Honest to God. Yeah. It was crazy. It was crazy. You know, now that you're thinking about how, you know, damn, why?
All right, let's
just do some storytelling here, man.
Yeah, let's tell a story. How about it? Simon C. wants to know, Nick, Mr. Patrick, I'm from the UK. What is the best way for me to watch Deep South? Also, is there a show that would be great for a first-time viewer to get a flavor of what Deep South is all about? Thanks, Simon.
Yeah, you can pull us up on YouTube, but we are Deep South. And you can check out a bunch of different episodes. We was, for the longest time, we was letting out one match a week. You know, we would go and we would record like seven matches at a show, but we would, you know, release one match a week. That's why we would say that every match is a main event at Deep South, because those kids would get, you know, on our social media that we would release that they'd have their own week, you know, that they wasn't just part of a five match show. So, But that's how you can check us out. You can find our website at We Are Deep South, www.wearedeepsouth. And you can check us out on YouTube as well.
Yes. You can follow it there. It's got short clips and highlights and pics.
Yeah.
And see all the show promos, but the links as well. So if you're on Instagram, I'll make sure you check them out there.
Yeah, Instagram will kind of give you a really good idea, you know, little short clips and see different people and see the energy that we're creating there. It's especially our last show, man. We did really well our last one. It was one of our best ones. It was off the hook, and the people had a great time start to finish, man. It was fun show.
It's fun to see that Dos Barbecue show, man, has still got legs, still growing even more every time. It's bigger and bigger. That's great to hear, man.
Yeah, well, I'm so proud of my team. And they, you know, back a couple months ago, we ran the coldest show in wrestling history. And then the very next month, it was temperature wise not as cold, but the wind was crazy, and it made it the second show feel colder than the 16 degree show because of the wind. But we still had people come out, you know, not like we did our last one, because our last show, it was 70, 72 degrees, sunshine. We had a 3 o'clock bell time. People show up early, get their food and drink and start, you know, have a good time. And then bam, we hit them with a good, you know, when no intermission, we just run right through our show. And it was this last one, like I said, it was like one of our best ones, man. It was crowd wise because it's most of the people stay, but we're new. And a lot of people could, because since the wrestling is free, they'll say, hey, let's go check to see if we like that. You know, there's a lot of people that show up and just get something to eat and check it out and watch a match or two and Zoom, you know. But now our people that stay and start to finish, man, we've got a good set of people that then are hooking it up start to finish. But when we get our total numbers, we have to realize that we're still getting people that are coming and checking that are just walking by, because, you know, we're in the inner city right now, man. We're right down off Memorial Drive there at Tosh Barbecue. And people, it's a lot of action there.
Yeah.
And even though we're right there at the entrance of Oakland Cemetery, you wouldn't think there'd be a whole lot of action there, but there is, man. A lot of restaurants.
The whole area is getting
strip.
Big, man.
Yeah, it's growing. They got so many, you know, nice condos and apartments and stuff. It's really cool area of town.
We'll get a plug in and make sure we get some show promos in just a second. We've got a couple more questions. Want to make sure we get in. Mark Lindsay said, thanks for taking my time every other week to sit down with us, Mr. Patrick. I just saw Barry Horowitz turns 65 this week. Did you ever cross paths with him through the years? If so, what did you think of Barry, and do you have any fun stories?
Super nice guy. I don't really have a lot of stories. I only made one or two trips with him. I went up and worked with Pop in the Carolina. I filled in for a ref, though, Fargo, that used to referee for the Crockett's. He'd go into Tennessee every now and then and do the Roughhouse Fargo gimmick with the Fargo brothers. He was like the brother that they brought out of the Nut House, but he was a referee up in Charlotte. So every now and then, if he went and did his deal, I'd go up and do the Carolinas, because it always happened out that Pop would be working up there. So I'd go, get to see him at the time. So, what was the question again? I got to talking about
Barry Horowitz.
Oh, Barry Horowitz. Yeah. That's where I met Barry. It was back in the early Georgia Championship Wrestling days and from the Carolinas, and super technician. I mean, even from from back when we were all young and green. And he could promo. He was one of those guys that was going to make it, And if he came through now, he would probably make it even further now than he did back then.
Really?
Because he's an entertainer, and he had psychology and timing and a character, but a super nice guy. Like I said, what you see is what you get with him. He was pretty cool. I always got along. The little I was around him, we got along really well. We worked well together, too.
And Adam Kay hit us up and said, Nick, you refereed the match between Hulk Hogan and Sting at Halloween Havoc 1999. Hogan quickly laid down for Sting as soon as the bell rang, similar to the controversial moment that occurred 9 months later between Hogan and Jeff Jarrett at Bash at the Beach 2000. To provide context, Halloween Havoc 99 was the first pay-per-view under the direction of Vince Russo. Following this match, Hogan disappeared from television until February of 2000. It's worth noting that Russo went absent from the company when Hogan returned, and the incident was not mentioned on air as if it never happened. Before Halloween Havoc match, what discussions were you a part of regarding that finish?
None at all.
Okay.
None at all. Yeah,
he said,
Russo was the writer, and he was dealing with Hulk, and Hulk had his own room, and they were dealing with him and hashing all that out. When I reffed it, what I did, I probably didn't find out what was going on till almost I got to the gorilla position. That was the way it was a lot of times with Hulk, but I can do that, and just tell me what the hell you need me to do. If there's anything specific you need from me during a match, a spot or something, then tell me. I need to know that. But other than that, I'll follow.
So he wanted to know, there was no change in the atmosphere backstage because it wasn't really known, right?
No, because if it would all have been done in Hulk's locker room, he kept everything within the confines of that room. So, everything was pretty much kayfabe. I knew because I was waiting to find out what was happening. and when they don't tell you until right before you go out, that means they've been hashing that shit out all day long, So, But I don't know what was said, or how they got to that point. But if that was the beginning of the Vince Russo era, then that was the beginning of the end, in my opinion, for WCW.
And what can you remember about your first thoughts of seeing that finish where he immediately lays down? Did you go, what in the world is happening? I know you're on air, you're going through your deal, but you had to be in your head going, wow, this was a swerve.
I thought it was a swerve, but I thought it ripped the people off. It didn't give them a match. It was shock value, but I don't think that it. I didn't like it. I didn't. I thought it was storyline wise. I guess I can see where he was going with it, but maybe I'm just critical because I'm not a Russo guy, at all. I tried to be because I was an agent at that time, and I had to try and make pull matches out of their storylines that was being set up, it was a tough time. Sitting through a lot of the production meetings for me was a tough time because he was funny. He would like to read script to everybody, and different little things that he would, it was like he was writing to try and get some elementary school kids to giggle. You know, he'd come up with a gimmick, okay, and the, their initials would spell shit or something, you know, and, you know, and then he'd giggle.
He's rushing on me.
Yeah, yeah, to see if everybody else laughed too, you know, or, you know, and it's like, and a lot of the stuff he did was, when especially when they try to lash back, he would watch what they did in WWE and then come up with some little spoof off of something that they did, you know, which didn't really do anything else but plug their stuff, in my opinion, you know. And
you got Big Flash, though? You just weren't a fan of his style?
No, just not a fan of his style. I had a job to do, and I wanted to keep my job. I'd worked my ass off to get to be in an agent position, and I wasn't going to speak up too loud and say, man, your shit sucks, dude, you know, because right. I've been gone, you know. So I just tried to make the best out of what was there. You know, and a lot of the TV production people, you know, that was in there, you know, in on the meetings, they didn't know the difference, you know, because I come from when if you don't draw, your money sucks and it affects how you live. Right. You know, and then, you know, if ratings weren't good, they were under contract. They're going to get paid the same if ratings suck or if ratings are good, you know, and they're trying to get their raise every year. But we were under different circumstances. They were getting a percentage of the gate. That's how we're living, you know. So those things make a huge difference. The only thing that he did that I did agree with was he tried to push a lot of new young talent. But the problem was they were trying to push too many at the same time. And it was like sitting in a three-ring circus. You don't know which one to look at. Not everybody's going to get over at the same time. And I know that they were trying to throw as much as up against the wall as they could to see what would stick. But that kind of sets up an unfair scenario for some guys that, you know, Mike could have got over if a little more time and attention and TLC was taking care of their gimmick or, you know, and trying to get them over.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. That's, well, there's so much young talent. You're creating so much and having the crowd.
All at the same time.
You're only somebody new and learn about them. And
yeah, you're only going to get a couple over because, you know, they've only got so much time, you know, within the confines of the show. And back then guys weren't going to get over just getting put over on WCW Saturday night. You know, they needed to be on the big shows, and the big show slots were only so many, you know, and they thought that putting guys over on WCW Saturday night was going to catch them on fire. And it, you know, it was good to keep the flow going, but, and it was good because they gave them different matchups sometimes. Some of the matches on WCW Saturday night was very good. But that wasn't going to, you know, you're not going to have everybody on the card get over. You know, there's going to be standouts that get over, and then everybody else is kind of, you know, as long as you get a good match out of it, then they're happy.
And before we get out of here and get you a Deep South plug for sure, but since we recorded last, we had talked about the WWE Hall of Fame, and we had already announced that Paul Heyman was getting in, and Bull Nakano was getting in.
Yeah,
and they did announce another one. What's your thoughts? The U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda will now officially be in the Hall of Fame class for 2024.
Well, I think it's great because both guys are great guys, you know, and they were there in the mix for Vince back in the day on several different things. And, you know, Windham is a Hall of Fame worker. So's Mike, you know, yeah. And his gimmick, you know, got over at a time where there was a lot of gimmicks, you know, and he was a great, one of the guys that knew how to get other folks over and still keep his heat, you know, and he was excellent at doing that, you know, and to me, yeah, I think that they both deserve that. Especially for people that follow the WWE and have followed it for years and years, then they would have to agree, you know, because both of those guys were impact players.
Yeah, they, of course, like you said, both solo incredible careers. Yeah. And then getting together, made their debut for the then WWF in the fall of 84 and had the tag team titles twice in 85. They lost those belts at WrestleMania 1. Where Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik notoriously beat him there. So just an incredible career for those two. They both, of course, got legacy as well. So that is a nice addition to the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2024. Nick, before we get out of here, like we mentioned, Deep South, you got a bunch of things coming up. Do you have one before April 13th?
No, we got April 13th is our next one. Yeah, okay. We've got five matches already signed.
Already?
Oh, yeah. We're our main event. Skrilla the Great is going to be defending the Deep South title. Oh, my goodness. My light just went out. Oh, there it is. He's against Owen Knight, young man that I've been trying to get to come in, but I wanted the time to be right because this kid is a super talent, you know, and one of the kids that you would want to feature up at the top of your card. And we're trying to build everybody. You know, because like we say, every match is a main event here, like I said a little while ago. So, but Owen's going to be taking on Skrilla the Great. We're going to have Zach Mosley taking on The Wall in our last show. The Wall coming interfered with Zach's chance of winning the Deep South title from Skrilla. And he ended up hitting Zach with the high boot. He ended up getting involved and costing the title. So we're bringing it back and getting Zach a chance to get a little payback on The Wall. We got Nikki Heat is going to be coming in.
I wanted to say real quick, I was just at another event in Tennessee and got to see The Wall, and yeah. I recognized him from you promoting him coming through. So that's cool that he's coming back through. That's going to be awesome. He was really
good. He's a kid I said that was going to Germany. I mean, when I said that we're using kids that are going, you know, Tyson Maddox is one that's going to Japan coming up. But he just got back from a big tour in Germany and Europe. So we got kids that are going international. So we got a tag team match. DJ Smoke and Cosmo Martinez is going to be taking on Luka Daniels and Grayson. And at our last show, we had this match scheduled, but Spiral had a family emergency and had to back out. We had another young kid come in, step up in a big way, and gave Najee a hell of a match. And I had to get the kid's name. But anyway, we're having a rematch. Spiral is, you know, because he was completely business about it. You can't schedule, you know, we didn't know till the day of the show. But we were able to get a really good substitute for him. And, you know, you can't schedule when you have a family emergency. And it's legit. And he had a family emergency. And we still want to give him another chance to get into the mix. So he's going to be taking on Nauseousism at the next show as it was scheduled at the last one. And that is should be a – you know, we like starting off our matches with just – fire, man, and aggression, and two kids that go out and just light it up, and that's what you're going to get out of this match. So it's going to be awesome, and Nikki Heat's going to be taking on Jimma Jules. So it's going to be
Jules back in action.
Yeah, Jimma, she's going to be back in action too. So everything is going really well right now, man. I'm tickled to death. And Eric Adams is a young man that's been mainly my business manager, running everything for me. You know, everything goes through me. I play the Vince McMahon role. You know, I hear about everything and I pull my hair. You know, but he's working his butt off, man. And it's his ideas and his stuff that he's putting together that's the reason why we're starting to get up and fly. And when you see the things we have coming up, You'll understand why I said keep saying we got stuff in the fire. We're going to bring that fire out here pretty soon. Let you see what we got going.
I can't wait for it. And we will actually, by the time that comes on, we will have another show. Mm-hmm. So we will make sure we get another plug in and see if any updates has been made to that card. But either way, that's going to be April 13th. You got time to plan. Mark that on your calendars. DOS Barbecue in Atlanta, Georgia, Deep South Wrestling, already a stacked card, and that thing is getting bigger and better, and that's because every time you come, you got another stacked card. So going to be looking forward to that one, and we also, next time we're back, we look forward to answering your questions. So everybody out there, get in touch with us. Wherever you listen to this, drop it there on the ad-free shows page, and we will get your questions in. Nick, man, always fun to catch up with you, brother. Thanks for dealing with me out of pocket a little bit on the production side behind the curtain. But
oh no, man, that was cool. Hey, I'm glad it was on your end, because if I had to fix things on this end, I'd be screaming for my son to come in here and help me, man. If it's beyond make finding the one or two buttons to push, then you can forget it with me. It wasn't all that long ago. I was a flip phone guy. They had to drag me into this century screaming and kicking. Young kids used to laugh at me and see my flip phone. I was like, oh, man, you can't run a company and have one of them. I've been trying.
You've updated now, though, right?
Yeah, oh, hell, I'm all okay. Up in it now, man, yeah.
You're in now. Well, that was some times when I was – setting all this up, I thought, I wish we'd just go back to damn flip phones and be done.
The old flip phone days, yeah.
I felt a lot stupid real quick. But thanks, everybody, for joining us. Appreciate y'all. We appreciate you every single week interacting with us. That's what keeps this show going. Be sure to follow Deep South on Instagram, deep_south_wrestling. Go to their website, We Are Deep South. And, of course, look that up on YouTube as well. Like we mentioned, if you'd like to see some of their stuff, their past matches, they've got highlights and promos as well. Some of the storylines are up there. So a lot going on there on the Deep South Wrestling page over in Atlanta, Georgia. For Mr. Nick Patrick, I'm your host, Cassio. We'll see you back here again in 2 weeks for the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick.